Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hope you're having a great day. It's Wednesday, May the 14th. Again, you're listening to AFR. Tim, Wesley, and Ray, raised in Kansas City. We're in Tupelo, and joining us here in studio is Steve Paisley Jordahl. Good morning, Brother Steve.
Good morning, everybody. How
are
y'all doing?
What do you got leading the news?
Well, I just wanted to pay tribute, if I could, to the national treasure that is known as John Kennedy, Senator from Louisiana.
Yes.
Who is was addressing the Democrats who, for some reason, think that Donald Trump lost in his negotiations with China instead of won. That's the one that they want to hear. So let's just, without further ado, play cut 12.
What do you make of that deal? And what message do you think it sends to the rest of the world? And Scott Bessent said 130 countries are lined up.
Well, I think it's obvious. Unless you're the reason that your parents drank, you see that it was a big victory, not just for President Trump, but for America. Before the president did what he did, China's tariffs on the United States were a little over 20% on average. Now they're 10. Our tariffs on China were a little over 20. Now they're 30. That's a 20-point swing. Now, I've listened all day to some of my Democratic colleagues say that, well, we didn't get anything for it. You know, if you believe that, I'm not saying you're the dumbest person in the world, but you better hope the dumbest person in the world doesn't die.
Who is this?
That's John Kennedy.
Senator from Louisiana.
Yes.
He's like the Will Rogers of the Senate.
Yes.
He became my new favorite for today.
Yeah, he's always got a quip. And it's a quotable clip for us here on today.
He might not be the dumbest person in the world, but he better hope the dumbest person in the world doesn't die.
Yeah.
He says it in a way, too. Or you're processing, did he just say that before he moved on to the next one?
Yeah, and you know what part of the country he's from, too.
That's right.
Pretty clear.
That's right.
All right.
All right.
Now, Ray was setting this up an hour ago. We were teasing it.
I heard.
This topic,
yeah.
What we're going to discuss. Go ahead.
So, I'm always fascinated when we hear in the news different things that they discover that kind of set the Bible apart as not only historically accurate, but cannily accurate, very accurate. As a history book, a lot of people who are not Christians and don't claim any faith, they use the Bible as an archaeological book. It's so reliable. And the latest edition, they think they have found in the mountain regions in Turkey near a mount called Ararat, that is still called Ararat, a massive vessel, something buried in the ground. This is the Durupinar Formation is what they're calling this. And they've taken some ground-penetrating radar, and they've found what they think could possibly be Noah's Ark.
This has been a place that has been talked about, Ray, for a long time, decades, I guess, as a possible resting site for Noah's Ark. What do you make of all with this latest discovery?
Well, number one, where did Noah's Ark land? It's very interesting what the book of Genesis says, because we ought to go back and get to the foundation here. This is Genesis chapter 8, verse 4. On the 17th day of the seventh month, the ark came to rest on, and this is the key point, Tim, on the mountains, plural, of Ararat. Now, there is a mountain in eastern Turkey, way over by the border with, with Armenia. But right there near the border is this vast mountain we know today as Mount Ararat. It's always been known that way. The Hebrew text says the mountains, plural, of Ararat. So let's just say the ark came to rest somewhere either on literal Mount Ararat or on one of the mountains nearby in that region. Okay, so that's the setup. So Steve, What else do we know?
Well, they've detected what appears to be a 13-foot tunnel running the length of this with this ground-penetrating radar. They have found what they think are three different levels, which despite the number of stairs I climbed in Tennessee when I went to the Ark Encounter, I think they have like 20 different levels.
Kentucky.
They have the Bible says three levels, and that's what they're finding there. So the ark is supposed to be 300 cubits by 50 cubits by 30 cubits, about 515 by 86 by 52, and that's about the same dimensions that they're finding in this Durupinar formation. Here's what we're not expecting. They will, if they dig, and the plan is to have them excavate, they're not expecting to find a fully formed boat. It's made of wood, and over the thousands of years, it has decomposed. What they are hoping to find are chemical imprints that say that wood was there, and they could find some artifacts that lasted the amount of time. They're going to find some chemical clues in the grass and the dirt around this.
So the government of Turkey, though, would have to grant these archaeologists permission to dig, right? I mean, am I right?
Yes. It's an interesting site. If you can go and look it up, it's called
you're talking about this part.
Noah's Ark Scans.
Oh, okay.
Look up Noah's Ark Scans online, and you'll find all the pictures that they've taken and the research data. It's a big site. Noah's Ark Scans.
Wesley, you've been to the Ark.
In fact, we're going again with a bunch of AFA listeners.
Again. Mm-hmm. When are you going?
We're going.
This is the Ark replica, not the actual Ark.
That's right. Yeah, we're not going to Turkey.
You're not going to Turkey.
No.
You're going. This is the Answers in Genesis.
That's
Ken
right.
Ham, this is their project.
It's right. In Hebron, Kentucky.
You've been three or four times, right?
Mm-hmm, I have. We're going again. We go annually with listeners from American Family Radio, and we're going October the 30th and 31st.
What do you do?
Year. We have, in the afternoons, we have a speaker and time of fellowship and hanging out together and eating. During the daytime, we're going to visit two sites. So day one, we're going to visit the Creation Museum, and day two, we're going to visit the Ark Encounter. So, and you can find out all the details of that, and you can sign up for our trip at afa.net/events, afa.net/events.
Now, y'all usually fill up for that.
It'll fill up, yes, sir.
Wait, two or 300 folks?
Hey, 200 people.
200 people need to stop.
That's right, yes.
And then you have buses to get around, right?
Yes, sir. Well, it's a wonderful.
Everything's planned out.
Everything's organized, planned out. And you'll get to see for what we're describing here of what they think they have found.
The real Ark.
The real Ark in Turkey. There's a replica of it with the same dimensions as you described.
Yeah, and many, many floors.
Yeah, many floors. Yeah.
I'm sure it's faithful to what the scripture says. They probably have a floor that's like the roof. Noah would have been able to walk on the top of the boat. This
that's
is covered,
right.
So it's.
So Ray, what do you say when if somebody says, "Come on, man, an ark with a bunch of animals on there, 2x2, and the world floods, and these are the only people left, and that's a nice little children's story, and makes for a colorful book, but that's a fairy tale. What do you say?
Well, first of all, I just say read the Bible for yourself. The people who make those kind of comments almost never have read the book of Genesis.
Right, true.
They've almost never read what Jesus said as it was in the days of Noah. They've almost never read what Peter said in 2 Peter chapter 3. What's obvious to me is not just that the Bible teaches there was Noah, there was an ark, and there was a worldwide flood, but that the Bible is absolutely consistent. And it's very clear to me that when you read the words of Jesus, they don't even make any sense unless you say that Jesus himself, the Son of God, believed in the literal truthfulness of the story of Noah and the ark, because he said, as it was in the days of Noah, so it shall be. And go all the way to 2 Peter, you can see it there too. So the Bible is completely consistent. That's one thing to say. The second thing to say is, if you want to know how it's possible, I got to say this about, when was it? Maybe it was last summer. Yeah, it was last summer. Marlene and I were in up around Lexington visiting Marlene's brother and sister-in-law, and we had a couple of hours. We didn't have long enough, Wes. We didn't have as long as your team is going to have, but we drove up there, and we saw the big ark, the Ark Encounter, and it is one of the most, I've been around the world, I've never seen anything as stunning, as incredible as the ark, the replica of what the ark was. I think if you go there and see it, I'm not saying it'll make you believe. If you don't want to believe, you just won't believe.
Sure.
But it'll certainly convince you that what the story as recorded in the Bible, what is recorded there, that it actually really did happen. So to circle back around, Tim, to this article, are we saying that this very strange formation, are we saying that's where Noah's Ark landed? And that it was buried for all these several thousands of years. No. And I think the people who are doing the research, they aren't saying that. But what they are saying, Steve can correct me here, I think what they are saying, there's a remarkable resemblance. If you use this ground-penetrating radar, there's something down there, that does not appear to be, quote, a normal geological formation. It appears to be something man-made that's calcified or ossified, whatever the word is, down there.
Fossilized, the word they're using.
Okay, thank you. Fossilized. There's something down there, and it might be the remains, the fossilized remains of what once was Noah's Ark. And wouldn't that be an incredible find in this skeptical, God-doubting age?
It would be. This site I've put you all to, noahsarkscans.com, has links to Answers in Genesis, so they're all at one.
Yeah. Again, Wesley, AFA at the Ark, which we all will be going in October, and you'll be taking a group to visit both the Ark and the Creation Museum, and you're going to have some special speakers like from Answers in Genesis and so forth, right?
That is correct. We are going to have Dr. Georgia Purdom. She has been with us the last couple of years. She does a phenomenal job. Dr. Georgia Purdom, and we also have Dr. Danny Faulkner. Both of those are professors or teachers or on staff there at Answers in Genesis, and they'll come and this they're doing this special for our group. So this is not a
how do you register? So you only got room for 200, and you're going to be full.
That's right. And I don't know. I haven't got a count in a while, but I know that it's filling up if it's not already full. And you can go to afa.net/events. That's afa.net/events. If I could just make a couple comments on your question to Ray, and then we can move on to the next topic. But when I went to the quick answer that I would give is look at the evidence that we do have instead of speculating on what we don't have. Because when I went to Answers in Genesis and went to the Ark, two of the things that stood out to me the most that I wanted answers for as it relates to being able to give a good reason for the defense and the hope that I have in me. And that's that there's a significant difference between kinds and species and animals. And so you can find out, I found out there that for the question of like, well, there's so many different types of animals, how do you get them all on one boat? Well, you can get multiple species from a few different kinds of animals. I'm not going to go any further than that because I don't want to mess up the.
I have some follow-up questions for you.
Okay.
So
in addition to that, another thing that I discovered and that was very helpful for me is that when you think of putting animals on a boat, you also think of animals at their full size, when in reality, who's to say that they can't be a baby version or small version?
Yeah, smaller version.
A puppy versus a dog.
Yeah.
As it relates to taking up space. And so Answers in Genesis does a phenomenal job of helping you think critically.
They explain. They don't run from the questions.
The difficult ones, right?
Right.
Those are the two most common ones that I hear as far as objections or criticisms to the ark.
Look, if I'm going to have an ark, Wesley, I want a baby hippo. I don't want some monstrous hippo on my
back. Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's amazing. You go to that place in Kentucky, and from the parking lot, you can see it, right?
That's right.
Yes.
And you think, well, that looks big. And then you realize over a mile away from the parking lot.
Yes. That's right.
It's massive.
Yeah, wow. Well, also, there's a guy there named Ken Ham. Mm-hmm. And
he dedicated his life to this.
He talks funny. Have you ever heard him?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. It's his team. Tell him Tim said hello.
Says the guy from Mississippi.
And listen to him talk. Right. I know, right? Ken's a friend. I don't see him often, but we've been friends for a long time, and he's a native Australian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I referenced his funny talk. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story.
All right, we have learned that Elon Musk is leaving his responsibilities at Doge. Some say he's run the course and he's done what he said he's going to do. He's also, his car company is in a bit of a trouble because of the political blowback that he's getting. This would be Tesla. So he's going to go back to Tesla, and they are getting somebody to replace him by the name of Russell Vogt. Now, you might recognize that name. Russell Vogt was on a short list of candidates for the Supreme Court at one point under the first Trump administration. He was not obviously appointed, but he's been at the Office of Management and Budget for Donald Trump from in both terms. Chris knows his wife, who does some publicity who helps get interviews with the Heritage Foundation. Asked her, is he leaving OMB to take this new position, or will he be kind of doing double duty? And she said she didn't know, and to ask his press person. I think that's being political. I have a feeling she knows. But she's not allowed to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, either he's going to be leaving OMB, Office of Management and Budget, or he's going to be staying there and also taking on responsibilities of Doge. I want you to hear a little bit about his thoughts about where this country has been.
Again, who is this we're about to hear?
Russell Vogt.
Okay, now he's going to take Elon Musk's place.
Yes.
And the Doge is short for what?
Department of
Government Efficiency. And what they've been doing is finding waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government.
By the billions.
And now Musk is going back to Tesla, and the gentleman we're about to hear right now, who is a real conservative, he's one of us.
Yep.
He's going to be commenting on, he's about to comment on what?
He was asked about the state of the conservative state versus the liberal state.
I got you.
He's asked about different. This is his list of complaints about liberal America. And we'll talk about it afterwards if you want to. Cut 11.
This is you. I think a quote. Aggressively turned against the American people, trillions of dollars were used to fund cultural Marxism, radical green new scams, and even our own invasion. No agency was spared in the less taxpayer-funded cultural revolution. That's pretty strong language from the OMB.
It is strong, and it's based on the fact that the country saw and put President Trump in office to deal with the reality that when you have the Department of Education funding the indoctrination of preschoolers and funding the teaching of teachers to be revolutionaries in the classroom and have a Health and Human Services that is trying to trans our kids through the grant programs and has research programs at NIH that is funding gain-of-function research that contributed to the last pandemic, you have something that is fundamentally wrong in this country.
Man, I like him.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Do it.
I like him.
Do it. Yeah.
I will say this for President Trump. He has, I'm giving a broad general overview of his personnel decisions from cabinet level to others who aren't, but still. But he's done so much better this second time around, has Trump, than he did his first time around.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because he learned by experience and because that a lot of people that he thought he could he didn't know who to trust exactly. He honestly didn't know exactly how Washington operated either, mm-hmm. or to the extent that he could use executive power to advance a conservative agenda. So I think I just wanted to say that I think that was one of the people that he surrounded himself with that That's right. just heard from. And I just think overall, you're going to have some blips along the way. You're going to have some people get in trouble or scandal or make mistakes, but because there's a lot of people that work for the president. Yeah. But overall, I think he's done an outstanding job with the people that he surrounded himself with. Yep. Don't you?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Ray, you concur there? Or?
The first few months of that first term, they were chaotic.
Is
that
a
good word? They were chaotic, and they've been very disciplined. This time around, Mr. Trump and his team, they knew exactly not just what they wanted to do, but they knew who they wanted in the key positions. And, Mr. Trump's second term
much more prepared.
There's a gentleman that a lot of people don't know. You wouldn't necessarily know who he is if you're just a casual observer of the news. But he is a driving force for President Trump, and his name is Stephen Miller, right?
That's right. Yeah.
You follow this?
Just a big fan.
Yeah.
Just a big fan. He stays on script. He's very disciplined. He didn't get caught up in the emotions of the media.
Right.
And he also does a good job of exposing them as who they are, the media.
Yeah.
And, of course, he stays.
But he's a policy guy, too.
Yeah. And I don't follow him as closely in that area. I mostly see him responding to the media. But you're right. He's a huge part of the agenda that's being played out.
What do you think about his press secretary so far? What's her name?
She's fantastic. Caroline Leavitt. She's young, in her 20s, and she just seems to have an ability to – it seems extemporaneous when she talks. She doesn't be looking at her notes all the time, but she just knows her stuff. Everything that she says has been vetted, I'm sure, that she runs it by the president. What can we say about this? She talks and she gives to the press. Her job is to represent the president, and boy, does she do a good job of it. And especially after 4 years of the Biden press secretary.
Circle back. And then there was
Jen Psaki, and then there's
KJP.
Yep. Karine Jean-Pierre. So
Karine Jean-Pierre, you'll have to check. Karine Jean-Pierre was famous for telling reporters, I don't know, go check with somebody else.
Right.
Basically, in essence, that's what she would say.
Yep.
Or she wanted to be clear.
Yes. She never was.
She wanted to be clear, and then she never was. So anyway.
Yep.
Whatever happened to her, by the way? Where'd she usually they leave and go get a talk show somewhere.
I don't think she has.
Karine Jean-Pierre.
I don't think she'd be a really good candidate for it. Much like
Jen Psaki did,
but she was fairly well-spoken. I don't know that Karine Jean-Pierre has a lot to say.
Can carry a TV show?
I don't think she's got that kind of a talent in her.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I don't want to be mean, but.
I know.
Hey, as we leave, Major League Baseball has reinstated Pete Rose and all the members of the Black Sox.
Right. Shoeless
Joe Jackson is now reinstated in baseball. They will be eligible to be voted on for the Hall of Fame if writers so choose to put them in.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Tim, are you voting? How are you voting if you have a ballot? If you had a ballot.
For Pete Rose, I don't know too much about Shoeless Joe Jackson's story. I do know he got involved in a scandal. I would vote for Pete Rose to be in the Hall of Fame because he was punished enough.
Yes.
In his life for betting on his own team. He did lie about that for a long time. I know he did wrong there, but I just think he was punished enough. The guy had 4,200 hits. I say it's time to put him in. If you want to put him in with an asterisk beside his name, that's fine, but he deserved to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.